Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon for this Thursday, February 7th. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today and a real fun show today, including folks from the Juno Pride Chorus. They're going to be doing singing telegrams. We'll talk to them about that. Really cool teen driving training program coming up in April called Put on the Brakes. And we'll talk to the people in town that got that going for the Taylor White Foundation. And also to one of the folks coming in from South Carolina, a drag racer and driver trainer who will be talking to us. Doug Herbert is going to be talking to us on the phone. Ken Burns is going to be doing a Skype live into Juno Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater, and Colette Costa will be here to talk to us about that and about the film that she's showing of Ken Burns called The Central Park Five. And we'll be talking to Nancy DeCherney and find out all the stuff going on during Arts Up, which includes wearable arts coming up this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Well, there's a chance of rain for the rest of today, and snow is likely tonight, with changing to rain overnight and accumulation possibly up to an inch. Then the snow level rising up to about 200 feet overnight as it gets a little bit warmer. Rain is in the forecast for tomorrow with highs around 37 degrees. And cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow. Lows around 33 for Friday night. Coming up next, National Native News, and we'll be back with folks from the Juno Pride Chorus in just a couple of minutes.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The head of Canada's Assembly of First Nations recently returned from sick leave. Sean Atleo says he's reinvigorated by the protests across Canada and a six-week hunger strike by a Northern Ontario chief. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Atleo is preparing for upcoming talks with the Prime Minister.
Atleo must follow up on the controversial meeting a month ago between Prime Minister Harper and the Chiefs, which concluded with a pledge of more talks, but no firm dates were nailed down. Atleo wants concrete action from the government on First Nations issues by the spring. The Chiefs presented Harper with a list of priorities, and Atleo has moved some of those items to the top of his agenda. Among them, a government commitment to empower senior officials to modernize and implement treaties and speed up comprehensive land claims. Many First Nations leaders are angry that the treaties and inherent rights have long been ignored by government. They say that's left many of their communities impoverished, uneducated, and unable to progress. And Atleo reiterated that on these issues, First Nations leaders are united.
But we also must ensure we never give any government an excuse to ignore our demands because we're not clear, because our message is confused. We must ensure that we never let governments use division or disunity as an excuse for delay or inaction. About that, we will always be united. As I've said, we are stronger together. This is now more important, more than ever before.
Many chiefs say the signed treaties were meant to share the land and its spoils and should be set out in modern language so First Nations have clear rights to funding, revenue from natural resources, and the ability to have a standard of living similar to other Canadians. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Scholars, authors, sports reporters, and others are discussing Indian mascots at the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. The day-long symposium, Racist Stereotypes and Cultural Appropriation in American Sports, includes a talk about the Washington Redskins name. Suzanne Schoen Harjo, president of the Morningstar Institute, is a moderator at the event today. Harjo's a longtime opponent of the name. She was a guest recently on the radio show Native America Calling, talking about the team name.
I don't use it because it's the worst slur that we are called in the Native, in the English language, and it harkens back to a despicable, heinous history of when our body parts and scalps and skins were commodified and used as bounty payments for proof of Indian kill. But you don't even have to know that history or understand that history to appreciate that on its face, it is a race-based slur.
Debate over the team name was recently in the spotlight again after Washington, D.C.'s mayor publicly stated discussions of a name change need to take place if the team returns to D.C. Opinions on the Washington Redskins name are diverse in Indian country, while some Native organizations and tribes support a name change. Information and a web stream on the Indian mascot event can be found at the National Museum of the American Indian website. On this day in 2012, an online petition began after a 12-year-old Menominee girl was punished for speaking her native language at a Catholic school in Wisconsin. The girl's family received what they thought was a generic letter of apology and felt that a more personal one was needed. As a result, the school's principal sent letters home with students apologizing for the perception of cultural discrimination and advised that the school would promote cultural diversity through awareness programs. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Well, a rendition there of a song made famous by Elvis Presley, and done there by the Juno Pride Chorus, a beautiful rendition, and I have three members of the Pride Chorus with me right now, Becky Bear, Rachel Zond, and Lorraine Jones with me in the studio. Thanks to you all for coming in, and a really exciting thing about the song that people are listening to right now is that they can actually, in a way, purchase that song to be performed live for a loved one by the Juno Pride Chorus. Tell me a little bit about this great singing telegram program that's going on, Becky.
Well, I want to do a slight correction. You don't get the whole chorus. That's 40 people.
Okay.
You get our ensemble, which is 6 people.
Okay.
But we will perform two of four songs for your loved one any place in the borough. And if your loved one is outside of the borough, we're delivering one song by phone. And it's $50 for the two songs. It comes with a rose and a card, and it's $25 for the one song. And we actually have one that's being more expensive because we're going to perform for the Gastineau Rotary as the beginning of the day.
Great. And so we were talking a little bit here before we got on mic, and we were saying that now you have done this before. You did this last year for the first time, is
yeah,
that right?
It was my first time last year, and we had one car, and we drove all over town to offices and a couple of houses, and it's really fun to sing for people and embarrass them in front of their coworkers sometimes. And you know, the people were really touched because they knew who ordered it for them. And
right. So Rachel's done it, but Larray, you haven't done this before.
I haven't done it. This is really my first year with the chorus. I've been a Pride Chorus groupie for many, many, many years and had a little extra time in my schedule this year and decided to join the chorus. And then since I'm also retired, I had time to do some extra practices and be there all day for Thursday next week to go singing.
Now, what's it like? Is it more nerve-wracking to sing to just kind of one person, or is it more so to get ready for a bigger performance? It seems like it might be a little bit, get a little nervous before something like that. But how did that work out for you last year?
Well, yeah, you want to make sure, because people can hear you really well, that you're doing it right and giving them what they paid for, you know, a nice love song and expressing the feelings of the holiday.
Right.
We actually have one person who ordered a Valentine for a loved one who I have to notify what time we're going to do it, plus or minus 15 minutes, because this person wants to be present.
I see. Okay. I see. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Enjoy this.
I would want to. Yeah, I would want to. Yeah, definitely. To go see how it turns out and see how the reception happens and, yeah, all that stuff.
I would say the other thing is, I mean, I wasn't out with them last year, but I have been around when singing Valentine's happened. And generally, especially if you get something place like the SOB, when you walk in, people start following. So there's a cluster of people who get to enjoy it. Was that your experience last year?
Yes, definitely. Okay.
So
definitely.
What was the biggest crowd of people you ended up kind of singing to last year?
I think there was a pretty big crowd in the Department of Labor building.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in kind of a little lobby area, and people just poured out of offices and came instead.
Yeah, they're like, oh, the voice of angels. What's happening out here? Yeah. Oh, the Juno Pride Chorus is here. Well, that's great. And how about, tell me about just some of the, any kind of funny situations or weird stuff that happened last year or, you know, any dogs come at you or, you know?
No, fortunately not that, you know, it's just sometimes a trick to get from place to place. And
well, that now that you've got, you know, a lot to fit in one day, right? So is there a limit to how many you're able to accept?
That last year we did 20.
Okay.
This year so far we have five that are going to be in Juno and two on the radio. Over the phone. I think one of the differences is last year they were trying to do it in two cars, and this year it's going to be in one car. So
that'll
make things a lot easier.
Okay. And, I carpool it there and get from place to place. But I could see where maybe more than 20, it's going to be tough to get to all those places.
That's true.
Yeah,
it would be true.
It's also going to be hard on the throats. I don't think we're going to hit more than 20.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
But
right.
Who knows?
Lorraine, go ahead.
I was going to say the other songs besides the one that you played for their intro is "Wind Beneath My Wings" and "Till There Was You" from The Music Man, and "I'm Beginning to See the Light," which is pretty jazzy. So, pretty good gamut of songs.
Yeah, right. Something for everyone there. A couple for everyone. You could pick your favorites out of any of those. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the manager for the group. I'm not the one of the ones that's singing. I don't sing at that level. But I'm finding that I'm doing little snippets because people are saying, "How's that going?" I have to give them a little bit, and I say, "Okay." And they're a lot better than I am.
Right. Do the little Elvis. Yeah, sure. Throw that in there.
No,
yeah.
Actually, the one I've been singing most to people is "I'm Beginning to See the Light."
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
nice. And what's the general reception? Do you get people getting emotional, or do you get people who are just super happy, or what?
There
happens?
Are some people who got kind of teary-eyed, and even some of the people who were just the audience and had nothing to do with it got a little misty. And then there was one customer who was very, very embarrassed. And his coworkers very politely ignored the whole thing and just walked on by and acted like they didn't know we were singing to him.
Did he acknowledge your presence at all?
Or? He did. He said thank you, and he said, "You know, one song was enough. You don't have to sing the second one."
It's done the trick.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that their partner knew that that might embarrass them a little bit, right? That was
On the other hand, you know, this year we have someone who sent a Valentine in a previous year, who the receiver is now sending one.
Oh, okay, great.
Back to them.
Yeah,
so
that's fun.
Obviously, they liked it.
Yeah. Well, tell everyone a little bit about if they want to get this and want to get a singing telegram. How do they go about contacting you guys, and how do they get one of these, and all that?
They call me.
Okay.
At 957-3650, and although the posters we've had around town say cash or check, we've got our credit card thing set up now. So they can give me the credit card on the phone there. And that's it.
All right. Easy as that.
Yeah, and they do get to choose their songs.
Yes.
You know, so that's...
It's like a human jukebox.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
You put the money in. Yeah, you know, you can only pick what's in the jukebox, but yeah, you got four choices, and there you go. Get two songs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that we have one song that's only been chosen once.
Oh, okay.
Which surprised me, which is "Wind Beneath My Wings." I thought that was going
to
be a biggie.
That seems to me like a big one, yeah.
But "Till There Was You" is big, and "I'm Beginning to See the Light" is big, so.
Is there ones that you find that like are that men want to hear more than women or anything like that, or just mm-hmm. just
we
everyone?
We do have the choose one and make it good, please. Yes, sir.
Jukebox's choice.
Yeah, jukebox's choice.
All right. Well, that's the Juno Pride Chorus, and the ensemble will come and sing a telegram to a loved one or to you, or even do it over the phone. And you can call Becky at 957-3650 and find out more information about that and order a telegram for Valentine's Day. What a great Valentine's that is. Thanks to you guys, and thanks so much to everything that Juno Pride Chorus does and all the beautiful music you make.
Thanks for having us
okay.
on.
Yes,
thank you.
Terrific.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, driver's seat. Well, the driver's seat is where a lot of young kids end up, obviously, when they're teenagers. We all get our driver's license. But are they prepared to get in that driver's seat, and do they know all the great rules of the road, all the really important safety rules of the road? Well, that's something that's going to be put on as a teen driving training course happening in April. It's called Put on the Brakes, and I've got a board member of the Taylor White Foundation who's putting this on right now with us in the studio, which is Linda Cabello. Linda, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And also on the phone with us, calling in from South Carolina, Doug Hubert. Doug Herbert, right, Doug?
Yes.
How you doing?
Doing good.
So good to have you joining us today up here in, how's the weather down there in South Carolina right now?
Well, I'm actually in North Carolina. We're in Charlotte, North Carolina. Like, you know, people don't realize it, but Charlotte, North Carolina is kind of like the racing capital of the world.
And absolutely
so
it is.
We've got a lot of kids driving around here on the road that think they're Dale Earnhardt Jr., and so we try and give them a little bit of extra driver training to be safe on the road. My real thing is I drive a top-fuel dragster in the NHRA, so we over 330 miles an hour. So we know something about driving. And
did you just say 330 miles an hour?
Yep, these top-fuel dragsters that I race, yeah, they go 0 to 330 miles an hour in 4 seconds. So
how quick do you do you race a quarter mile or half mile, or what do you?
Quarter mile.
And how fast do you do a quarter mile in one of your top-fuel dragsters?
About 4 seconds.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
My 92 Saturn won't quite do that fast, but yeah, that's good stuff.
you're going to be a little behind your Saturn.
Yeah, it doesn't quite. Well, I'm going to bore out the pistons, and we'll figure it out. We'll get something going there. Well, and Linda, let me just turn to you too. This is the Taylor White Foundation. Tell people a little bit about the Taylor White Foundation.
So this foundation was established in 2009 after the death of my friend Taylor White. His parents basically started the foundation to kind of help the community, help the youth, try to encourage them not to drink and drive and, you know, be safe.
Make good choices,
right.
Make safer choices about their lifestyle,
exactly.
and especially when it comes to what they're doing surrounding driving.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's such a perfect fit. And Doug, tell me a little bit about how you got into doing this training.
Well, we got hooked up with Carol White, which was Taylor White's mother. She was interested in doing something to help the teenagers be a little safer behind the wheel. And the reason why I know about that is back in 2008, my two sons were killed in a car accident over here. So I started a charity called BREAKS, and that's an acronym for Be Responsible and Keep Everyone Safe. And so we've done driver training all around the country and trained about over 8,000 teenagers about being better drivers behind the wheel. And just a lot of things that you don't normally learn in driver's ed, about controlling a car in a condition that you would never get in unless you're just before you get into an accident. So we try and give these teenagers a little bit of extra driving experience before they get into a situation. And, our instructors are the same caliber of instructors that teach the Secret Service guys that drive the president around. So some of the, just really, really good instructors, the people that I would want to teach my teenager and somebody to go out and really make a difference, and that's what we're trying to do. And obviously, that's what the .org is working on, and then everybody up there in Alaska has the same goal in mind to help keep teenagers safe, and so they can come home and be with their family and everyone that loves them.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great way to do something positive out of obviously an incredibly tragic situation. I mean, it's really commendable work you're doing. It sounds like it's probably pretty fun work too, working with kids and getting out there and getting out on the course with them and actually doing hands-on training.
Well, it is. They get all this school work and even their driver's education is kind of like you go down there when you have your teacher teaches you how to parallel park your car or whatever, and these instructors are we're teaching them like. Driving while they're trying to text, and all of a sudden they're hitting cones and they're going off the course, and they kind of go, well, geez, I can't do this, and we tell them, well, exactly right.
Yeah.
That's why you put the phone down. You don't drive with the phone. Oh yeah, okay, I get it. It puts them in a little bit of a high stress situation where they realize that what they're good decisions behind the wheel.
Yeah, you mentioned texting, and I think there's also kind of a broader term, distracted driving, that I've heard quite a bit. That's sort of becoming recognized as one of the number one causes of accidents. Is there other examples that you see, especially with young people, of how they get distracted while driving? Is there kind of a couple out there that you can think of that maybe people wouldn't think of right away?
Well, I mean, there's so many things that. Teenagers now, there's, with all the new electronics and all this stuff coming out there, they're not only, like when I was a kid, right, we're messing with the radio or you're trying to eat something or you're trying to talk to a friend in the back seat, but now there's 10 times more distractions involved. So it's just a bad situation. And I realized before my two sons were killed in a car accident that there's over 6,000 teenagers killed every year in car accidents, and it's actually the number one killer of teenagers. And that's why, luckily, we get together with great people like Carol and Linda and everybody at the Taylor White organization to help make a difference and to help get that number lower, because we can't really necessarily do anything about people getting killed in Iraq or whatever, but we can really make a difference about these teenagers in our home, in our towns. And
yeah.
I think that's kind of what this is all about.
Well, Linda, tell me a little bit about how people can sign up for it. And also, I know that right now you're talking, it's a few months out, but you're talking about it right now because you're interested in getting parents to know about this course and also even getting folks who are interested in helping volunteer on this. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank our sponsors, our grant from the CrossFit Fund at Mendenhall Auto Center for giving us 16 cars to use on that weekend, UAS, and then the Margaret Franz Brady Fund. But basically, all you have to do is go to taylorwhite.org/training, and there's a link there, and you can basically just sign up there. You will need to make a $99 deposit, which is 100% refundable. It's basically just there to ensure that you're actually going to show up. But, it's free, and we really want to get the word out right now because we're still trying to fund this. We still need some sponsors, and we really want to encourage as many youth as possible to come out and their parents, because there's only 144 spots available, but we still encourage, any adult that wants to participate, because this program is designed for an adult to, come along and learn as well. And we've gotten great response from all of our businesses that we've approached, and they're very supportive and enthusiastic. And we really believe in getting the youth trained early, because then they're more likely to know what to do in a crisis situation when they,
find themselves. Well, I find that even when I'm driving, the things that I kind of learned as a teenager driving, those things stay with you, and the maybe even the close calls you have, that one time I almost hit a car that was in my blind spot, and those kinds of things are the things that really stay with you. And so learning early is great, but as you're saying, it's certainly not the exclusive territory of teenagers to have bad decision making when they're driving, or to not know, or to not be properly trained, and anyone could use training driving like this. It sounds really cool.
Yeah,
it sounds really exciting.
Well, one of the neat things is actually make, we require the parents to come with the teams, and so class lasts 4 hours. So we'll have up in Alaska, we'll have a morning class Saturday and an afternoon class. Getting over a cold. But anyway, it'll be during the class. The first part that the parents and teenagers will be together.
Okay.
And then we'll split them off. And the teenagers will go, three teenagers to one instructor, and they'll go through their training. And then the parents also have instructors to take it to them. So the teenagers get to go through basically the same training at the same time. And then we bring them back together at the end of the class. So it's a real relationship. In addition to, to being a driving school.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Hey, Doug,
it's the parents. The parents are generally going to the class, and then the teenagers saying, gosh, I can't believe you're doing this to me. Why are you making me come here? I've already went to driver's ed. I've done all this stuff. And then by the end of the class, the thing gets turned around, and the teenagers are generally like, wow, I can't believe I didn't want to come here. This is so cool. I had no idea how much I was going to learn and how really fun it was going to be.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds like a great time, and couldn't be a better use of a few hours of a weekend in April to be a safer driver, be a better driver, make better decisions, and be more informed about how to be a good driver. Well, Doug, sorry you're feeling bad there. Your cell phone's breaking up a little too, so maybe I'll just get Linda, you to just repeat one more time how folks can find out about this and anything else you maybe want to cover about Put on the Brakes, this driving training course that's coming up on April 13th and 14th.
Well, like I said, just go to taylorwhite.org/training, and there's a direct link there. It's very simple. I don't really have much to add, except for anybody that's wondering. It's just basically, four stations that are provided for these teen to learn. There's a skid control station, distracted driving course, a sudden stop accident avoidance station, and a simulated driving under the influence course, which I think is going to be pretty entertaining to watch.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome to see it.
That's the one you put on the funny goggles that make you not be able to get you disoriented, and then try to figure out how to... it simulates driving impaired. And Yeah, so, well, there it is. It's put on the brakes. Go to taylorwhite.org to find out more information about that. taylorwhite.org/training. We'll get you right to the spot there on put on the brakes, be responsible, and keep everyone safe is the acronym for brakes. And it's all part of the Taylor White Foundation's program that's coming up on April 13th and 14th, sponsored by the CrossFit Fund. And as you said, Mendenhall Auto is also being really generous and donating and brave in donating some cars to these to these kids who are going to be learning all weekend on it. All right. Well, thanks so much to you, Linda. And also thanks to Doug there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Really appreciate you joining us as well, Doug.
You bet. Thank you, guys. We'll look pretty soon.
Great. Okay. Here's the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 7th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of two famous Midwestern authors, Laura Ingalls Wilder and Sinclair Lewis. Sinclair Lewis, born in Sauk Center, Minnesota, 1885, author of Main Street, Babbitt, many other novels. He left Minnesota as soon as he could, headed east, worked for newspapers, for magazines, wrote some potboiler novels and a few serious ones. And then in 1920, when he was 35 years old, he walked up to H.L. Mencken and George Jean Nathan, editors of the magazine The American Mercury, and he put his arms around their necks and he started yelling that he was the best writer in the country and he'd just written the best book in the country that would be published in a week and they ought to read it. He went on like this at high volume for about half an hour. Mencken and Nathan finally escaped. Mencken thought Sinclair Lewis was an idiot, but he read the book, and he was bowled over by it. The book was Main Street, came out in 1920, about a small town, Minnesota, Gopher Prairie, which Sinclair Lewis said was inhabited by, quote, a savorless people, gulping tasteless food, and sitting afterward coatless and thoughtless, in rocking chairs prickly with inane decorations, listening to mechanical music, saying mechanical things about the excellence of Ford automobiles and viewing themselves as the greatest race in the world. It was a scathing satire of small-town American life and a big sensation, and within 9 months it sold about 200,000 copies, and Sinclair Lewis became a very wealthy writer. And 2 years later he published Babbitt, which was also very successful. In 1930, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. He wrote 22 novels in all, 16 of which involved Midwestern towns or Midwestern protagonists. He said he found creative inspiration, quote, sitting in Pullman smoking cars in a Minnesota village, on a Vermont farm, in a hotel in Kansas City or Savannah, listening to the normal daily drone of what are to me the most fascinating and exotic people in the world, the average citizens of the United States. Laura Ingalls Wilder, born just north of Pepin, Wisconsin, 1867, about which she wrote her book Little House in the Big Woods, which begins, once upon a time, 60 years ago, a little girl lived in the big woods of Wisconsin in a little gray house made of logs. Here's a poem for today by Robert Louis Stevenson, In the Highlands. In the highlands, in the country places where the old plain men have rosy faces and the young fair maidens quiet eyes, where essential silence cheers and blesses and forever in the hill recesses her more lovely music broods and dies. Oh, to mount again where erst I haunted, where the old red hills are bird enchanted, and the low green meadows bright with sward, and when even dies, the million tinted, and the night has come and planets glinted, lo, the valley hollow, lamp bestarred. Oh, to dream, oh, to awake, and wander there, and with delight to take and render through the trance of silence quiet breath. Lo, for there, among the flowers and grasses, only the mightier movement sounds and passes, only winds and rivers, life and death. A poem by Robert Louis Stevenson, In the Highlands. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. That's a perfect intro song for this subject.
Well, Ichigo Park.
Ichigo Park.
It has a park in it. Central Park. Well, hey, how you doing?
Good, Andy. How are you?
You've got a really cool event coming up, the Gold Town Nickelodeon.
It's happening
Saturday. It's really kind of amazing.
It's really amazing. Like, it hasn't...
Maybe I don't believe you. Maybe this is a hoax.
I kind of think it is. I've been saying the only two ways we're going to be really... Like, the Gold Town is really ever going to take off and just be, like, the place you have to be is if we got, like, Meryl Streep to show up or if someone murdered someone outside the building. But you'd have to murder someone famous. So don't bother killing just anybody. Don't even waste your time. I want, like, a River Phoenix kind of thing. But I don't think the Viper Club's doing that well anymore.
No.
So
it's not the place to be.
I've tried everything else. Weddings, people getting pregnant, everything inside there. But this might be it. I think this is going to be it.
And people getting pregnant or giving birth?
Whatever.
Giving birth would be good.
Yeah, I'll
it
do
wouldn't
that.
Put you on the map, though.
No.
No.
People
no.
do that in taxis.
Yeah. All right, so listen, we've talking about this film. What's happening is that the film Central Park 5 is a film you've been showing there for a while, and Ken Burns is the director of that
Correct.
Film. Ken Burns is going to do a live video Skype
video
into
Skype.
The Gold Town Theater at 6 o'clock on Saturday.
Correct.
Answer questions from the crowd.
Talk
have a discussion, kind of a moderated discussion. Pat Race is going to conduct the discussion, who's
Correct.
A filmmaker here in town. And also Aaron Suring, from Alaska Robotics and Lucid Reverie, will be there conducting it. And so it's an opportunity for people to see this great movie.
Yes.
And also...
Chat.
Chat with Ken Burns. Ken Burns of the Civil War and baseball and
jazz. Crazy.
All the amazing documentaries.
I feel like it's coming full circle because I once accidentally walked in on Ken Burns debuting his jazz series at the Nashville Gibson Museum.
Mm-hmm. So he was there? You walked in on him?
Well, we were just
made a scene?
We were trying to sneak in, quite frankly. It was $10 at the door.
You walked backwards through the exit?
Well, I didn't know they were actually doing the debut, so I was like, let's go sneak in the servant's entrance. And we did, and we walked in. There was a huge press conference going on that we kind of walked in the middle of. And
nice.
Very embarrassing.
That's good stuff.
So I'm feeling like this is my redemption with Ken Burns.
Is that how you got him to do this?
I mentioned it.
Yeah.
And he was like, that was you? No kidding.
Did he remember?
No, of course not.
No, he didn't remember that. He didn't care. That's a blip.
It's
Ken Burns lives a life. He's a Mac Daddy. He's a player.
Well, what's funny is I think of Ken Burns as this, which he has a very contemporary documentary. I mean, he's probably the preeminent documentarian of our time.
Probably the most influential, for sure. I mean, as far as like styles of documentaries and things like that. I mean, he has influenced every documentary.
He's got a special effect named after him.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
But then I was talking to some friends of mine who are, half a generation off, and they were like, oh, I grew up with Ken Burns. The Civil War was quite a while ago.
It was 20 years ago.
And...
I mean, the actual Civil War, of course, was...
A while back.
Yeah, 150 or so.
$150.
But the series Civil War, which was almost as epic as the actual Civil War itself...
Almost lasted as long, too.
Yeah, it almost lasted as long.
So he's done these incredible series, and he doesn't do a lot of feature-length
documentary films. You know, he tends to work in these big, big subject matters, and really breaks them down into the human, you know, the human components. So, but his daughter, Sarah Burns, wrote a book called Central Park 5 not too long, a couple years back, and it was just a chronicle of this crime that happened in Central Park in the 80s, and these five youths were illegal. And what am I trying to say, Andy?
Five youths were?
Improperly. Thank you. Were improperly.
Convicted?
Of the crime and sent to jail, blah, blah, blah. And so she was chronicling not just the crime and the lives of these boys, but sort of that time in the 80s and New York. And
the crime was a horrific and terrible rape.
Yeah.
And beating and attack that happened.
Yeah.
And then this sort of series of circumstances, these five young guys got accused of the crime.
Correct.
But incorrectly, as it turns out, accused of the crime.
And sent to jail.
But kind of became a witch hunt type situation.
That, very much so.
And, you know, so those of us, I mean, I remember this. I was a young person then, but I remember this hitting the headlines.
I was 83. You weren't that young.
Well, I was in college then. Okay. I was young. I could be young and be in college.
So
I'm not saying I was eight, you know.
So he has, so that was, you know, that's his tie into the whole thing. And then his producer is a man named David McMahon, who produced most of his big series, also happens to be his son-in-law. So we had shown this movie, you know, a few times, and, you know, it's a very heavy topic. You know, this is, like you said, this is not a Jennifer Aniston rom-com.
No.
It's a terribly well-done movie, and it really is, you know, kind of an important story for American history anyway. And
says a lot about criminal justice system, obviously. It says a lot about human nature as well, though.
And very much so.
And how, you know, when you're really looking for someone to pin something on, boy, there's a lot of people that look like they could be the people that did it.
Well, the ironic thing is most of these guys had an alibi at the time, because they were beating somebody else up in a different part of the
park. But that's the thing. They weren't angels.
Correct. But they weren't.
But they didn't commit this crime.
They were just kids.
Yeah, they were just kids.
Dumb kids.
Right.
Anyway, so I had a chat with the distributor of this film, and you know, it wasn't doing very well, and so.
Well, documentaries are hard to begin with. They don't there's not typically a lot of blockbuster documentaries.
No, they come along once in a while.
There's only so many people as dynamic as Al Gore. You know, and so, but I mean, that might be the higher level, in giving you truth. And there are these documentaries that come out and can, but this is a really tough subject but done by an incredibly good filmmaker, obviously, Ken Burns.
And a really intriguing story on top of that. So long story short, you know, I threw this email out to my distributor and said, you know, whenever we do, we've done these video Skypes before. We did the Wayne White one, which was wonderful. And I said, you know, they're always a big crowd pleaser, and we always get great attendance for them because it's something more interesting. It makes a better connection. And of course, I was not thinking like, oh, we're going to have Ken Burns through a Skype, whatever, because, you know, he's kind of got other things to do.
Yeah.
And about 2 days later, I got an email from the distributor, kind of, you know, it was a group email. With David McMahon, and it said, hey, David, do you think we could set this up? And 4 days later, it was done.
That's cool.
And I said, well, you know, we'd love to do it on a, you know, I'm showing it Tuesday and Wednesday night at 7 p.m. next week. Oh, let's do this prime time, and we can have all this time in the world. And I sent him this, you know, incredibly verbose email, like, oh, we can do this and that and the other. And his response was, Ken Burns is available Saturday at 6 p.m. to do this.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I was like, yes, please.
Yes, sir, may I have another?
And, you know, he's on the East Coast, so it's going to be like 10 o'clock his time. So, you know, God bless him.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So Saturday, so we're basically sandwiching it in between two screenings of the film. On Saturday, we have a 4 p.m. screening and a 7 p.m. The movie is 2 hours long. So as soon as the credits start to roll, we're going to get him on the line, bring him up on the screen. He's going to be there live virtually.
You have a camera on the folks in the Juno as well?
Yeah. You know, I asked him if there was anything particular he wanted to talk about, and he said, you know, by the time people are done watching this movie, there's plenty of fodder that we never have to seed.
Yeah, I'm sure he's
the
done
talk.
These live, you know,
sure.
before. Maybe he hasn't Skyped in before, but he's probably done
I
these
think
live.
He has.
Yeah,
not here.
Yeah, right.
But he's going to be there live. You can talk to him, ask him questions. We'll have about 40-45 minutes with him, and then we'll have the 7 o'clock show right after. And basically, I'm telling people that. If you've already seen the movie, feel free to come down. If you're going to go to the 7, you can come early and catch the Skype and then go to the 7. You don't have to come and see the movie that night, but we do have three other showings of it. Sunday at 2 p.m., we have one more matinee, and then the Tuesday, Wednesday at 7 p.m. And I think it's certainly intriguing enough that certainly when once you've talked to him, you're gonna want to get in on that. So, and it's Ken Burns.
It's Ken Burns.
Sort of crazy. And
do you think the subject matter when people talk to him should be as much as possible limited to this movie, or what are you thinking?
I don't particularly think so. I think it's going to tend to go in that direction, but obviously his body of work is so large,
vast,
and
yeah,
that
amazing.
People may want
and so diverse.
And I think he's also he's a storyteller and a filmmaker, so there's part of it is just I think talking about the craft itself and decisions that he made and. You know, how he got involved with stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little cottage industry, that Florentine Films and all that. I mean, it just is amazing. And every time he does something, it's kind of golden.
He's incredibly hardworking. He really is. And he's constantly got, as you can imagine, a number of projects going on. And I think he's pretty careful about what he puts his attaches
absolutely.
His name to.
I think that's absolutely true. And I mean, he tends to, as you say, he often tackles these large issues, World War II, the Civil War,
or
baseball, the history that, the multiple 100-year history of baseball, jazz, this incredibly diverse mm-hmm. and huge subject. So it's really interesting for him to apply his kind of this, what he normally does to this very specific story.
And it's very differently told. I have to say, there's not a lot of the Ken Burns effect
right.
in the movie, which I found interesting mm-hmm. as someone who studies film. He relies heavily on, well, that was an interesting choice. He relies heavily on the artist's sketches from the trial. And even though
the vintage artist sketches, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. And of course it's cut between interviews, contemporary interviews with the five men involved in the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, fascinating.
Pretty complete picture.
All right, so that's happening. It's 6 o'clock. It's Saturday.
And I know that we all know it's Wearable Arts this weekend. So that's why I thought, it's 6 o'clock. Even if you're going to the 7 o'clock show, if you got there, we're doing this at 6. And I don't mean Juno 6 o'clock. I mean 6 o'clock according to my phone.
Wearable Arts starts at 8.
So
Stop in till 6:45. Go home. Get over to Wearable Art.
Yeah.
It's fine. You'll
be
fine.
Big weekend.
It's a big weekend.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy.
I can't make it.
And you know what else?
Quick. I'll be busy.
Neither can I.
Yeah.
And a quick shout out. We're also opening.
Yeah, I was going to ask. What else is going on?
Well, we're also opening Rust and Bone this weekend, which I am absolutely so excited about.
What is that?
It's the new Marion Cotillard movie, and she won the Oscar a couple years
ago.
For Livia and Rose.
Oh, okay. She's not the Australian filmmaker who did the piano?
No, that's Campbell.
Oh, okay,
Julie.
My bad. Sorry.
No, stop talking.
My bad.
Marion Cotillard is that beautiful French actress who was in From Paris with Love.
Ah, yes.
So, who won an Oscar for Livia and Rose a couple years ago.
Okay.
And it's Matthias Schroeder, who's where is he from? Doesn't matter. He's just kind of French and hot.
Okay.
And he plays
a
boxer.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Nice.
Anyway, it's a beautiful love story. Really, really, really incredibly powerful little film.
Cool.
And it's got whales in it. So what's not to love?
There you go.
Yeah. So
Boom.
We had that this weekend. And the other super cool thing is today at 5:30, we're doing, they're doing that Jake concert next week on the 11th.
Yep, on
Jake
Monday.
Shimabukuro. Thank you. And so tonight we're showing a little documentary that these people made about him.
Yeah, right. So tell me, yeah, that's right. It's called Life Told by Four Strings.
Life on Four Strings.
Life on Four Strings,
yeah.
Yes.
And it premiered at the Asian Film Festival this year, I think. It's only an hour long. We're doing doors open at 5:30. We have some local people who are going to come down and play some ukulele tunes.
Cool.
At about 5:40, and then we'll start the movie at just before 6 o'clock.
Nice.
And it'll be done right before Rust and Bone at 7.
There you go.
Full day.
Gold Town.
I know.
Doing it for us.
Doing it.
Doing it. Doing it. And
for
doing
you,
it well.
For you guys, Juno. Because I'm a care bear.
All right. Let's hear a little Jake Shimabukuro right now. Colette,
yeah,
thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Nancy DeCherney, as I live and breathe.
Barely breathing.
How are you doing?
How are you doing?
I've got that same laugh. I'm just laughing. We're both kind of up to our eyeballs in wearable art and all the preparation for that right now. And that's the big thing on our plate right now, right? For
that
this
is
weekend,
the big
obviously.
Plate on our. I mean, you know, there's a lot of little details. No, you know, sometimes you just don't recognize that. It seemed like fun at the time.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
So that's for Arts
okay.
Up. I guess that's the first thing we would talk about is wearable arts, but it's sold out. So what's it, is there an option for folks that have not yet gotten tickets?
There are options. If you come to the door at 7 o'clock Saturday or at 2 o'clock on Sunday, it has been my experience over the many years that I have done this that 10% of the people do not show up. Don't ask me.
Don't ask me why. Spend the good money.
I know. So there will be probably strong likelihood that people who wish to come to the show will get in. And
okay.
We'd love to see them.
Okay,
so,
great.
Yeah.
So there's hope. If you did not get a ticket yet, you can show up. And hopefully there will be enough no-shows that will make up a difference and you can get in there.
And sometimes we are able to put in extra seats because sometimes the show just, I don't know, I think Centennial Hall is kind of elastic or something.
Yeah, it stretches.
You never know. If you push on the wall hard enough,
it'll
too much breathing in and breathing out. But, you know, on Friday, there are some fun stuff, things to talk about. There's Annie going on.
Okay,
Annie,
JDHS.
Annie the musical. Yeah, that runs this weekend. We've got Harbor Seals on the Move. That is the 6:30 and 8 p.m. Forest Service Fireside Chat out at the Minden Hall Visitors Glacier Center.
Very cool.
So that's a nice little thing. We have Liquid Genius at the Rendezvous at 9:30 p.m.
Okay, I've seen Liquid Genius. They're quite good.
Are they?
Yes, they played a KXLL show and were really fun.
Okay, then. On Saturday, there's something at Rainbow Foods called Sweeten Your Life by Eliminating Cane Sugar Intake.
Okay.
Jenna Fontanella is doing that. It's a free little conversation. And a lot of things at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. An Alaskan Lighthouse, A Brief History of Lighthouses.
Is that wise?
They didn't ask that.
No. Okay. No.
A Brief History of Lighthouses of Alaska and the Preservation of Sentinel Island Lighthouse. This is a city museum, one of their coffee and collection type things. There is a great Juno drawing class with Lee Post for fourth graders over in Douglas.
Very
that's
cool.
Free. Little League registration. Coastal observation. No, I don't think that's happening. I made that up.
Okay.
And I don't think that's happening. And I don't think that's happening.
This is just doing a little...
Editing as we go along.
Yeah, it's just taken care of.
It's been kind of tough, let's just say that. The Saturday session, but you already talked with Costa about all the films she's got.
Yes.
Saturday sessions at UAS downtown at 2 p.m. is basic car maintenance. And if I wasn't doing something else, I'd be doing that because I need some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at 7 o'clock on Saturday is a chamber music night with the Juno String Ensembles. This is at Northern Light Church. They can get tickets at the door, and they will be performing the music that they plan to take to China. And I know that the Chinese folk songs figure amongst that. It's beautiful music. Wonderful. And again, Annie. And as we mentioned, wearable art.
Yes.
Okay. And then on Sunday...
More wearable art.
You can never have too much wearable art.
It's going to, just real briefly, for anyone who hasn't been there or anyone who already has tickets, It's really going to be fun. The set's already starting to come together over in Centennial Hall. Some of that's already happening. It's already looking cool. So everything's kind of...
Who knew that plywood could look
cool? I know. It's very, very interesting, cool stuff. Bauer Clifton Interiors with the kind of the masterminds behind it all. And Northwind Architects over there putting it together. And Bing Carrillo, of course. So there's all these great technical people over there putting it together. So it's going to be a great, fun show. Nancy
Exciting
and I
stuff.
Are just tired. But we'll
and
be fine.
And let me just tell you that
come
the silent
Saturday, we'll be ready.
The silent auction is twice as big as usual.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I want to just say
just
thanks.
Just went
to,
for it. Oh, great.
Yeah, we
That's
had
great.
A Tanya Cadigan went out and she brought it in.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, yes. Tanya. Okay, so Sunday at 1 o'clock, you could learn how to roller skate with the Juno Roller Girls. They're starting a session. It's a 10-week course, but you need to register, and that's the first one. At 1 o'clock, there's a Valentine Tea Party out at Nugget Mall, which is a little reminder that Valentine's mm-hmm. Day is coming. At 2 p.m., Annie the Musical. Also, there's a great Juno drawing class with Lee Post for grades 5th through 12. We have the family movie night over at the Douglas Library, and I don't know which movie they're showing, so I can't help you with that. We do have, as part of the wearable art show on Sunday, is the Mayor's Awards, which is always fun. It's nice to say thank you to those folks. One of the people who made one of the painted one of the frames just came in and said, you know, while I was painting it, I just thought to myself how much these people have contributed. So it's really nice. Okay.
Yeah,
Monday is your last day to sign up for a singing Valentine from the Pride Chorus.
They were just in here earlier talking about
do
that.
Do they yes. sing?
They, well, yes.
Well, good.
Pre-recorded, but
okay.
yes.
Okay. Innovation Summit, something that JEDC is doing, starts Monday afternoon at 3:30 and runs through Tuesday. All sorts of really inspiring stuff. Call JEDC for more information on that. And, of course, Jake Shimabukuro on Monday evening.
That's a big deal.
And we have, I think, 190 tickets left.
Boy, okay, that's going to be a huge crowd, and that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, Tuesday's Fat Tuesday, so pancakes all around. And it's also Lincoln's birthday. Let's see, we got a couple of other things. Domesticity is on Wednesday. That's the Mudrooms theme for the month. That's at Holy Trinity, $7 at the door with a music by Hillbilly Honeys on that one.
Nice.
So we got a lot of stuff kind of like cooking along there. And maybe we'll live through the week.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not betting on it, but yeah.
Oh, and Thursday, Steve Henriksen, they're going to start those lunch things over at the museum. Steve Henriksen will be talking about the long-lost Apollo 11 moon rock.
Oh, very cool.
Thursday
yes,
at noon.
The lost moon rock. I've heard about this.
Yes.
I didn't take it or anything. I've just heard about it.
Yes. Comic book.
All right. Well, Nancy DeCherney, that's Arts Up on a busy week for us at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, but a really fun artistic week happening.
Thanks.
Coming up. Thank you.
See you in a minute or two.
That's Arts Up, yes. Here's more of Jake Shimabukuro doing Bohemian Rhapsody. That's it for Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks to all my guests for joining me, including folks from the Juno Pride Chorus, also from the Put on the Brakes teen driving training happening in April. Thanks so much to the Taylor White Foundation for putting that on, to Doug Herbert for joining us all the way from Charlottesville, North Carolina. Thanks to Colette Costa for telling us all about what's happening Saturday, 6 p.m. at Goldtown, the Ken Burns Skype call that's happening. You can talk to Ken Burns about his filmmaking and about his film Central Park 5. And thanks to Nancy DeCherney for bringing us all the arts news on Arts Up. That's it for a Juno Afternoon today. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for joining us. And All Things Considered is coming up next in just a couple minutes. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators, the Valley and Auk Bay area. Tune in to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. Hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872. And KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
Companies that make and sell these goods know.